Today we have three speakers for the main event. To start us off, Francisco A. from Santa Cruz, California.
What an inspiring fellowship this is. Thank you very much. I am an alcoholic. My name is Francisco. It is quite amazing to see people from all over the world working together without hurting each other. It's truly beautiful. Thank you, San Antonio, Area 68, and all the region, Southwest region. And I thank all the General Service Board. And I don't know what the convention chair was thinking when he picked me up or invited me to share. It is a great, great privilege and honor to be here in front of all of you, brothers and sisters. It is very, very touching for me to be here and to see all these countries, all these people gathering together in love and service and fellowship. I am an alcoholic. You'll find that. I grew up in a family of eight brothers and sisters. I grew up in Mexico, in Sonora State. And I started drinking when I was 9 years old. And I have a lot of trouble in my life with that problem. In junior high, I remember so many experiences taking me out from... Well, you have to bear with me first, my broken English. You have to really pay attention. I think I'm like any other alcoholic who struggle in life, very sensitive and very fearful person. I went through very, very violent times in my life, very terrible situations. But I find out that I was very timid. I love the girls. But I was very timid, and I always felt like I needed something to get closer to them. And it was the alcohol that I always used. And it is very amazing to understand now my fear in my life, or almost everything. So I kept going on and on in my drinking, and it was very hard at that time to imagine that I would get into what I got through the years. And when I took off, when I was 14 years old, I went to another city to study my high school. And I felt the freedom of getting off my father, off my shoulders. And that was when I went wild from 14 to 17, drinking very often and thinking that I was enjoying life, and I felt very powerful. And By that time, it was really very hard. I was fighting. I was playing basketball in a school, and the teachers drink with me. Well, I drink with them because they were older. And I couldn't stop. I went to college. I came to college to Monterey, which is close from here. And that's when I totally lost all the sense of my life, my connection with my family. And I went on in so many different things that I started suffering. And I went probably like 21 years drinking. I have so many stories that what happened in my life when I was a kid, when I was getting older, and so many problems. But to make the story short about my drinking, I have a couple of broken fingers in my fights. And somebody also put me a knife in my chest. And I lost my family connections for over a year. I never called my home. The hardest thing that I remember in my life when I was drinking is when I really wanted to stop. I really tried so hard and I couldn't. So that was I understand that part. For all the alcoholics who went through this part in their career of drinking, that's a very painful situation when you really wanted to stop and you can't. And that's what I felt, that my despair and my emptiness, my misery. And I tried so hard to stop, and I remember hitting the walls with my hands and with my head because I felt powerless. And my dad couldn't stand me anymore, so he threw me away. He said, I don't want you anymore in my house, and I don't want you. I think you are a shame in my family. And I felt very lonely and despair. And angry. I'm just going to tell you just a little story, because probably we all went through the same thing, thinking that probably the next time we'll drink like normal. But when I met my wife in 1992, I met this person in my hometown, and I really believed that if I marry her, I would stop. May sound familiar. And that's amazing what happened, because she has to live with me for the next 2 years in that relationship, very, very sick relationship. And after he threw me away, I felt very empty with my broken finger that somebody hit me very bad and pulled my bone out. And I was very, very tired. I was like 125 pounds. And she left me and came back to her country here in the United States. And I came back looking for her, thinking, give me the last opportunity. Probably was the 20 at that time. And that's how I came to the United States. And it's fascinating to tell you that time it was June, July of 1993. I flew to Albuquerque, and I met her in Santa Fe. And we drove all the way to California together. And she asked me to please go back to Mexico and look for help. You are a very, very special person, but you need help. It was very insulting for me every time anybody would recommend that I will need help. So in January of 1994, I came to this country because she gave me the opportunity. And July 4 of 1994, it was my last drink. But I never thought that 16 years later, you will be doing all these things for me. You made me feel very special. It's a never-ending, actually, when we talk about our stories. It's a never-ending. So many repetitive cycles, the same resentment, violence, abusive, demoralizing moments, emptiness, loneliness, depression, and really, really suicidal thoughts. It is actually a misery, this disease. It's very painful. And I'm very glad today that I have this treasure in my heart, and I can understand deeply the power of that disease, how terrible it is, and how much damage the people and the family, all the society. It's a really big social problem. I totally understand that. And how blessed I am to have this amazing, beautiful fellowship in my life, who has saved my life. It is very, very special and touching, this moment in my life. So I got to an Spanish-speaking group in California. Totally, totally destroyed. It was the last time my wife threw me away with police officers behind me and dogs on the hills. They didn't catch me though. But after I got to my first meeting in a Grupo Libertad, the Watsonville, California, and I saw two members today, two members who were in that group at that time, and I truly appreciate their patience and their love, their time for me at that time. So here I am now as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous who loves this fellowship, who fell in love, and I always been. I felt hope since the first day I got to my first AA meeting. I didn't struggle really to accept. I couldn't live anymore. It was very hard for me, my life. So the first meeting, it was very hopeful for me. So I was in San Diego International Convention with almost about 1 year of sobriety. Well, sobriety? I don't think so. I was very lonely in San Diego with 56,000 people around there. I feel my anxiety, my insecurity. I was running from one side to another one, people yelling, and I felt empty. When I went to Minneapolis, I was a DCM of a new form district in California, Spanish speaking. And when I went to Toronto, I was a delegate serving the conference, this conference, you know, service conference. And, well, I wasn't planning to come to San Antonio, but they truly invited me this time. So I decided to come here. But the way they embraced me, really, this is a very special for me, and I have to say it. the English-speaking people in California Northern Coastal Area, 06. Really, they embraced me in the most loving, kind way that anybody who's craving for love will need. I really need attention, I really need love, I really need compassion. And I was willing to go any length to stop this craziness. So I thank them all for all their patience too, and sending me to the conference was one of the big highlights in my life, because I met so many people that I've been sitting here, that I serve with them, and I see people all over. And this fellowship is mine. I don't feel any separation. This is my fellowship. This is actually a great, great example of love and tolerance, really. When you, with your love, cut the barriers that sometimes separate us from the language. Because when I got to the area, I couldn't speak the language, the English. So they have to translate for us. And it's touching, of course, every time I'm going to say the same. It's very special to the way you all in this general service structure embrace all the Hispanic community and all of the other people too. This is a very fine, fine, special attitude. And having here all the people from all the rest of the world make us very unique. I don't know if you felt something with the flags. And in my mind was dreaming, what is so difficult to get along as human beings? And you see how easy it is to realize, to see the power, the magic of this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It really is. It truly is. How many people saw me on the streets, on the restaurants, past delegate from Florida? Come here and sit with me. You eat with me. I don't even know him. Never. Later on, I find out that he was a past delegate. This is amazing brotherhood. It's really a dream for society. It's so beautiful to love each other. I was craving for this part in my life. Really fulfill my whole emptiness, the sensation of love, the smiling faces. I don't think San Antonio will be disappointed to have us here. So, I really want to try a few words in Spanish, but it's hard for the whole thing of translation for the people. But you can tell that no matter what we talk here, the energy and the brotherhood is way more powerful. We don't need words, actually, to share our message when we behave, when we love each other. And that's very special for me. I have my little one, my wife, is still, and is sitting here in front of me. And it is amazing that she has the ability, the capability to handle me. And I love her, really. It's just amazing. It's hard for me to think, to put myself in her shoes. I would be all gone. So, I don't know with my time. But. So, I feel so grateful today that I'm alive. I went to do some jails and institutions in San Quentin because I read that they will close the prison. And I said, I'm going to go there before they close. And I did that service when I was 1 year sober in another institution. But when I went to San Quentin, I went to do what they call the brown card holder, that you have to go through all the rules and policies of the prison. And after they got me clear, I went four times on Monday from Santa Cruz, and they didn't allow me to enter because there was something wrong. My name didn't show up. But I went again until I think the fourth time they let me in. But it's so amazing because some people saw like I was doing a big sacrifice. And it wasn't at all a sacrifice. When I got in and I started seeing all the big gates and the officers treated me like a very a special citizen. And after having those meetings inside the institution, in San Quentin especially, it is so beautiful, the sensation of usefulness in my life. The clouds coming out in the evening, getting dark, and I was getting out of that jail. What a sensation of freedom and fulfillment. And I drove back, tearing, thinking, gosh, maybe I will be there for probably more years for the things that I have done. But that's the sweetest part of this program, is that part for me. It is a totally, what do you call, four dimensions you call? Something like that. Well, I think the meaning of life for me became in that experience, feeling that kind of experience, that I start feeling that part. And I said, that's what I needed. That's what I was looking for. My empty space that I always wanted to fulfill. I always run from place to place trying to find things to fulfill me. And of course, I want my Harley and my nice truck and my all my little things. And truly I'm totally into that tune right now in my life. I find out what is the reason that I was born, which it seems like this is the goal of the big book. It got me. I finally got it. And this is the path that I want to live the rest of my life. Nothing in life has been more fulfilling than being in service in so many different ways. Because sometimes we think like only if we pass the message to another alcoholic who still suffer, that's the only way to carry the message. But that's the beauty that I've been exposed in this fellowship, that there's so many ways we participate in carrying the message that sometimes we don't even realize that. I'm going to share a little story that I always share with my brothers and sisters in service and in groups, and it came from General Service Office. At that time, I think it was about 2000, Eva was serving at the literature desk at the GSO. And you hear today that there are 58 translations of the big book in different languages. And, okay, seems like my time is gone. But I was watching that thing, so I never knew. I'm going to finish this story quickly. Eva Sanchez sent a letter to everybody, to all the areas, to say that a new translation was done. And she told a story about it, and she said that when somebody called from Washington State asking for a little piece of literature in Mongolian because somebody needed there, and she, a minute before, she was giving the off-the-press Mongolian big book to one of the staff members. So they said, here it is. They came to her desk and said, Eva, here's the translation of the big book in Mongolian for you, the first one who came off the press. Thank you. And she said, I touched the book and I was dreaming, touching how amazing and beautiful and powerful this fellowship is. All the sacrifices for the rest of the world. And she touched the book and went into her dreams of beauty when the phone rang and woke her up. It was that guy from Washington asking for a piece of literature in Mongolian. And she said, yes, I do have it in my hands, and I'm going to give it to you. It really touched me. Really touched me. And that's how we participate. So when you send $1, that's what we do. So I love you. Thank you so much for this wonderful opportunity. And let's keep it up.
Thank you, Francisco. Our next speaker is Mari G. from Toronto, Ontario.
My name is Mari and I am an alcoholic. And by the grace of God, good fellowship, loving sponsorship, and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, it hasn't been necessary for me to take a drink since the 10th of August, 1984. And for that, I am truly grateful. I want to thank Francisco for his talk, and I'm looking forward to hearing Harold. And it's like God has a sense of humor, because when I first sobered up in Edmonton, Alberta, and I was running around looking for a God of my own understanding, I went up to this old woman who was a very spiritual woman. And I said, who is this God you have? I'm looking for a God. She says, Mary, my God's called Harold. I said, Harold? She said, you know that prayer, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. She was pulling my leg. I would like to thank Rick, who called me from New York, and everybody else who has put on this wonderful thing, for inviting me to come here. I am overwhelmed. I am also so grateful to be in the United States of America, where the founders founded this, the country that had the religious freedom to allow us to have a God of our own understanding. I am a hopeless alcoholic. I suffered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. I lost everything of value in my life, and I lived outside the perimeters of society. My drinking, well, I was born in Glasgow, Scotland, of Irish, English, and Scottish stock. And I never felt I belonged anywhere. All my life I felt different. All my life I felt less than. And all my life I felt as if I was on the outside looking in. I knew there was something wrong with me from when I could think. And the reason I knew there was something seriously wrong with me is because people were always saying, there's something seriously wrong with you. And I did not know that a drink would give me the only normal living I ever knew. And my life was running around trying to find somewhere to fit in. And eventually I went to London, England, and I joined British Airways. And I tried to fit in there, but you see, I did not like people. And it's extremely difficult to be on aircraft when you don't like people. And then I decided, you know, maybe if I get married, I'll be well. I met a wonderful man, and he fell in love with me. He was wonderful, cultured, a really nice man. I married a very nice man, and he married a figment of my imagination. And we went to live in Kingston, Jamaica. And just after a year, my first son was born, and after he was born, I thought, now I am going insane. For 25 years, I have walked the world. I did not want to drink. I knew I was CIA, Catholic Irish alcoholic. And then just as I thought I was going insane, someone came and said, come, have a drink. Jamaica has 151 proof rum. It is beautiful. I drank that 151 proof rum and it went all the way down deep inside of me like a piece of velvet and wrapped itself around every raw nerve ending I ever had. And just like Dr. Silkworth said, I had the only normal living I'll ever know. And I drank every day on a daily basis. And then I had my second child. And in Jamaica, the people, they accepted me and made me feel at home. I came from a man who married an old rum family. And then I became an embarrassment. And then people used to try and help me. And I was sent to Jump In for Jesus meetings. But it did not help. And then the cucumber became a pickle. And I used to listen to them in Jamaica. They used to say, Mary, come try a little sense meal, your man. Look how the liquor is making your eyes red. I said, I don't want nothing that's going to screw up my brain. I'll stick to alcohol. And then I left the island and divorced my husband and took my sons on a drunken geographic. And eventually I ended up back in Jamaica. And the children's father asked if he could have them for a week and they were gone for 13 years. I am an alcoholic, but I love my children with every fiber of my being. And I had a suicide attempt. And the psychiatrist in Jamaica came and said to me, something that was intellectually correct, very observant, and most definitely relevant to my condition. The psychiatrist said to me, you mustn't do that anymore. Eventually, I left the island because I was shaming everybody and shaming my children. I ended up living on the street at the bottom of Lincoln Road on Miami Beach. And that is where alcohol took me. You see, this is the most dreadful illness. And eventually my poor family found me and sent me back, and I went to Canada and ended up in mental institutions. And people tried to help me. And AA came in, but I never heard anything because I was full of drugs. The only excitement you have in there is an alcoholic. We have so many drugs in us because they want to keep us quiet. It's when one of us drop our cigarettes on our paper slippers. And we're too full of drugs to do anything but watch it burn. I got out of there one night and I was drinking myself sober, and I picked up the phone and I phoned AA. And a Metty, who had 28 years sobriety, came. And he shared his story. And he said to me, "I think you're one of us." I said, "I know I'm an alcoholic, Stan, but I'm also nuts." He says, "Mary, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is like 12 adjustable wrenches for any nut that comes through the door." My dry date is the 10th of August, 1984. On the 9th of August, 1984, I had had a slip, and I was in very bad shape. And some AA people in Edmonton took me to a meeting. Don't ever say you can't take a wet drunk to a meeting. Where else are we going to go? I was in such bad shape, they tell me I was shaking so much, strangers were waving back at me. And that night, a little gal from Winnipeg, who had 12 years sobriety, spent the night with me. And the next day she said, "I'm going to leave, you know, because you're a loser. And I only stick with winners in Alcoholics Anonymous. But before I go, I'm going to ask you to kneel down and say the third step prayer." And I said, "I kneel for nothing." And then something said, "Think of your children's eyes." And I thought of my poor sons who had this drunken mother that they loved. And I knelt down and I held her hands and I repeated the third step prayer after her. "God, I offer myself to thee." And from that moment to this, I have had no desire for a drink. None. Bill Wilson said once, "Alcoholics Anonymous is not a success story. Rather, it is the chronicle of our colossal human failure, turned to usefulness by the divine alchemy of a loving God." It is the most wonderful thing to me. And I am so very grateful to the people in Canada who cared. I went to Toronto and moved there when I was 10 months sober because my son was going to school. And two people from AA, because I called intergroup, met my plane. And I found a little place and I found a job and I saw my son for a year. I'll tell you, I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous since I became sober. I've had wonderful sponsors. I've had wonderful people. I'm an active member of my group, the Shepherd Group in Toronto, and I'm so grateful. Everything I have in my life today is because of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sons came back to me when they were big men, and they asked me to go to their weddings. And I went to their weddings. And my ex-husband and I walked my sons down the aisle. What is the miracle of that? And now I have 5 little grandchildren. And they phone me and tell me that they love me more than fresh vegetables. And I love the innocence of that. And my sons tell me, "Mom, we never knew where you were for such a long time. But you give us hope for life. And thank you for being our mother," they tell me. My poor parents died before they knew if I drew one sober breath. They never knew where I am. But they are here with me tonight because of this great fellowship of the Spirit. I will finish by saying something that came into my mind when I was looking across here, Our co-founder, Bill Wilson, wrote once about the Cathedral of the Spirit. You know, we don't own buildings. We don't own anything. But he said that when we come together in a room, the walls become covered by the 12 steps of recovery. The floor is covered by the 12 traditions, which is the unity. And the spiral, risen by eager, willing hands, is the hand of service reaching towards God. This is the Cathedral of the Spirit. Thank you.
Thank you, Maury. Now please help welcome our final speaker, Harold G. from Annapolis, Maryland.
Hi, y'all. My name is Harold, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a miracle, and I haven't had a drink today. And by the grace of God and the fellowship I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous, it hadn't been necessary for me to have a drink of alcohol since February 1970. I take no credit for that. I had the extraordinary good fortune to walk into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I sat down. And I took advantage of everything they were giving away. My home group is the Monday Night Back to Basics in Annapolis, Maryland, which everybody knows is the best group in Alcoholics Anonymous. You all ever get down to Annapolis, stop by and see us. Steps in Tradition. We have a lot of fun. I want to thank my friend Rick for picking me out. I don't know how he did it. It's kind of like the time my group was having a group managers meeting, and I went out to the bathroom and I came back and I was the GSR. But thank you, Rick, and thank all the staff. Haven't they done a fantastic job out here? I have to particularly thank my good friend Michelle from Archive. She was giving me some grief the other day. I'll get her back, though. And my friend Connolly Bird, you see this bow tie? Connolly tied that tie. The story goes with it. A friend of mine over in Paris dared me to wear it. He said, if I ever see you wear a pink tie, I'm going to tell them guys I know in Harlem about you. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't tell people the kind of life I've learned since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. We have what I believe is a masterpiece in motion. I once saw a giant tapestry, and on one side of a tapestry you see a beautiful picture. But if you look behind it, you see 1,000 threads going in 1,000 different directions. And if you pull a thread over here, the picture will change over here. Pull a thread over here, the picture will change over here. And those thousands of threads make up to be members of Alcoholics Anonymous and make up that beautiful mosaic. We are a mosaic in progress, and the whole world knows it. It's a pleasure for me to be here, and it's a pleasure for me to say, Happy Birthday, AA! Happy birthday, AA. 75 years of carrying our message to every corner of the world. The hopeless and helpless alcoholic. The person who hasn't found their way through the doors yet. We're the ones that are carrying it. We're the carriers of the message. I had no idea of what Alcoholics Anonymous was when I walked in the doors. I grew up on the east side of New York in a section of New York called Spanish Harlem. You grow up in Spanish Harlem, you grow up very quickly, or you might not grow up at all. In my old neighborhood, by today's standards, they would probably consider me an entrepreneur. In those days, I was a hustler. I used to find stuff before it officially got lost. Yeah. If it was small enough, I just stole it. If it was too big to carry, I lay down next to it and claimed it. You grow up in those kind of circumstances, you don't understand the kind of concepts we learn in AA. See, what's mine is mine and what's yours is negotiable. I think that that's true of alcoholics. They say we are loners, and I don't believe that. I think alcoholics are very, very private people. We keep our own counsel. We know what we think is best for us. That's why most of us wind up in here. And I think what happens is we put a wall out here and we try to build a wall to keep people out. And that wall gets higher and higher and higher, and then one day we realize that nobody can get to us because of the wall, but we're behind the wall and we can't get out. I used to run into that wall 14 times a day until I realized I could go around it. When I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no idea of the power that was within our doors. A great man once said to me that the power is in our experience. The power is in our collective and our individual experience, and that experience is in these rooms. As a kid growing up in New York, I had no sense of any of that. I think that we have the kind of loneliness and privacy that alcoholics treasure so that people can't find out who we really are. And that's what happened to me. I went through my life. I went through high school hiding and not being afraid. I grew up into an adult and went into the military and did the same thing. Got into trouble drinking. I began to drink when I was a little kid. In my neighborhood, everybody drank. If you didn't drink, people didn't trust you. And so I drank very, very early. And drinking was part of life. Drinking was the way it was. It never occurred to me that there was anything wrong with drinking. I came out of a neighborhood where everybody had a different lifestyle. Everybody had something else that they had to do. And nobody really looked at today, where they were going. Everybody had something else they wanted to do. And that's what I learned. Look to tomorrow. Not what you have today. And I grew up like that. I came into the military, and I went into the military, and I did very well in the military. I was fortunate enough to have some technical skills, and I learned physics and electronics, and I learned guided missiles. As a matter of fact, I'm probably one of the few people that know how to arm a barometric fuse for a hydrogen warhead. They once taught me how to do that. And I often wonder what would happen if I sat at a console and hit the wrong button while I was drinking. I think it's true of alcoholics. We are skilled people. We learn things and we have good ideas and we have good skills, but that cloud begins to come float down over us and clouds our minds, and that's what happened to me. I got clouded. I came out of the military. I had a lot of good skills. I went into the South Bronx where I came and grew up, and they didn't seem to need anybody that knew how to arm. There didn't seem to be a big need or demand for people that knew how to arm barometric fuses in the South Bronx. I took a test and I wound up on a New York City Police Department. And that was an experience all by itself. I was on a job. They put me in a house where I grew up. I grew up where I worked uptown. not too far where I grew up. And it was like old home week. I once locked a guy up for being drunk, and they had to carry me inside. By this time, I did another really, really alcoholic thing. I got married. Reason I got married was because my brother got married. All everybody was getting married in the neighborhood. I got married, and we married beautiful people. Alcoholics marry beautiful people. And I see we have a few Al-Anons in here tonight. God bless my... I love Al-Anon. We get a lot of transfers from them. So I got married and I started raising a family. And as things would happen, I got drunk. Got drunk everywhere I went. I drank. I drank until I fell down. I drank until the cops came or the place caught on fire or something would interfere with my drinking. And that's the way it was. And then I was getting in trouble on a job, and you know the story. Got in trouble on a job. I got in trouble at home. I was afraid to open the mailboxes. I'd get these letters with the big red letters on the outside say, pay up or die. And so I did another alcoholic thing. I walked out of my home with my wife and family and kids and everyone who loved me. I wound up in one room. And that's where I stayed, one room, trying to find peace of mind. And finally, I couldn't even afford that, and I wound up out in the street. I was wandering up and down the street, eating out of garbage cans or sleeping in dumpsters. And I had a home to go to. I had a wife who loved me and a family. And I was afraid to go back. Well, I'll never forget, I was sleeping in a basement one night, and I came to, and I looked around, and I said to myself, what are you doing in this basement? I come from a good family. I have a relatively good education. What are you doing here? And I had no answer for that. And I did what I always did when I got into a jackpot. I was going to pray. When I was a little kid, they took us to church, and I listened very carefully to what the minister said. And what I heard him say was, God was somebody you could make a deal with. Yeah, you do this for me, and I'll do that for you. And every time I got into trouble, that's what I'd do. Get me out of this. Well, I prayed in that basement, and nothing happened. At least I thought nothing happened. I understand today that God was there, and they never left. All I had to do was turn around and reach out. And that's what happened. God teaches us in many, many different ways. And I found out that He's here. He's here among us today. He was here then. And all I had to do was look around and reach out. And that's what I did. It turns out that I wound up in a hospital with a serious disease. And I stayed in that hospital for over a year. And while I was in the hospital, I had the extraordinary good fortune to have someone there who recognized that I needed help. And one day she asked me if I needed help, and I said I did. And she helped me and got me to my first meeting of AA. And I have to tell you, I got sober in the South Shore of Staten Island. South Shore of Staten Island. The John Birch Society started in the South Shore of Staten Island. There are people on the South Shore of Staten Island that think the John Birch Society are liberals. I walked into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I knew something was wrong the minute I walked in there. First thing, there were no black people in there. The other thing, there were guys in there wearing white shoes in the winter. And I was headed out the door. Guy walked up to me and he showed me a blue book. And he said, everything that you will ever need in life is in this book. And he said, I'm going to be your sponsor because you don't have brains enough to get one of your own. And he did. He did. He was a little about this size. L.E. was his name. He was a civil engineer. And he used to tell me on a regular basis the three words you never want to hear an alcoholic say is, "I've been thinking." You know whatever come after that going to be abuse. Well, we started walking down this road, and I began to understand what he was saying. He said to me once, "We're not interested in who you are. We're going to find out who you are not, and we're going to get rid of all of that, and who you are will show up." And that's what we did. I learned the truth. I learned the truth of my life here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned that truth without love is cruel, that confrontation without a solution is worthless. I had to face the truth of myself when I came here, but we do it with love and understanding and sensitivity. And when I confronted the truth of myself, there was a solution. And I learned what love is. I learned what God is. I learned that there is no reality separate from God. God is love and God is life. There can be no reality separate from God. And I know that He is here tonight, walking with us. As we walk down this road together, there are many pitfalls. There are many things that confront us. And I think that we see that it is because of the message of Alcoholics Anonymous that we can stay true to ourselves. It's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous, what I love the way Bill and Bob wrote about us. They gave us the tools that we need to move on. But more important, they gave us the answer. They gave us the answer that said that the great reality is deep down within each and every one of us. That's what he said. He told us that the great reality is not out there. If we're here by the grace of God, and I believe that, then it's not there, it's right here. And as long as I continue to seek that, I will have that power within me. And as I gain that power, I can pass it on just like you're passing it on tonight. By your presence here. As you go forward from here, and we're having a wonderful time here in San Antonio. I love San Antonio. They haven't eaten their chicken fried steak yet. Unbelievable. As we go out from here, as we go out from San Antonio, we're going to carry a message. We're going to carry a message to the guy or the gal who hasn't walked in here. Somebody told me there was somebody in here tonight with 3 days sober. 3 days sober. God bless you. God bless you. You've walked into a wall here, and we're going to hold you up. And I think that's the message. The message that we've been given, the message in our book is the real message. We're only 75 years old. Many of our founders have just recently left us. Many of them are still here. A good friend of mine up in Saskatchewan said that we are here because we stood on the backs of giants. And the giants, he wasn't only talking about Bill and Bob, he was talking about those of us who were here when we walked in. We are here by the grace of God. And it's our problem, it's our challenge to carry this message on and out. To take the message in our book and pass it through the fabric of our lives. And then pass it on and out to the guy or the gal who walks in here for the first time. The message of Alcoholics Anonymous is our message. It belongs to us. We have to protect it. Nobody else will. I had the rare fortune of knowing Lois Wilson, and I talked to her on a number of occasions. And I remember once talking to Lois. She used to, on Bill's anniversary, she would tell the story about the time that Bill met with some Arabic AAs. And in Arabic, when they greet you, they say, "We salute you and we thank you for your life." And Lois explained to me that the Arabs, Bill brought the message to the Arabs, and they got sober. And so when they greeted Bill, they say, "We salute you and we thank you for your life." Well, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got the message, but I got it from you, and I salute you, and I thank you for my life.
Thank you, Harold. And thank you for being here this evening. In a moment, we have one last special treat. But before we do that, for all those who care to, please stand and join with me in saying the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, may we have one more moment of silence, please.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found, was blind, but now I see. Sublime gracia del Señor, que un infeliz salvó. Thus far, and grace will lead me home.
Can I have everyone sing along with me one more time? Que todo el mundo cante conmigo, mi gente.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
What?